Hi, I'm science journalist Bernie Hobbs.
And I'm research chemist Dr. Alice Williamson. Welcome to Dear Science.
Each episode, we'll take a self-help question that's already been answered in a magazine and give it the science treatment.
Forget pop psychology and mystic interpretations. We want to know, what would science say?
Think of us as your alternative agony aunts, scouring peer-reviewed journals, pestering academics, and sifting through the data, all to provide scientific explanations to your personal problems.
What have you got there, Bernie?
Only Britain's leading online ladies magazine, Female First.
Oh, it sounds like a feminist magazine.
Yeah, it's not, but it does have a great problem page run by agony aunt Lucy. And Pete has written in because he's got a real thing for raincoats.
Dear Lucy, I'm very turned on by raincoats, but my wife is not keen. Do you have any advice? Kind regards, Peter.
Oh my God.
How about how short it is? It's like he's paying for the letter by every word he writes.
I know, he's a man of economy. He'd be a good scientist. Get straight to the point.
I do like it though, because it's a clear question. And he does get a reply from Lucy. Let's hear what she's got to say.
Hi, Peter. Perhaps your wife is not keen because it's an unusual thing to be turned on by. She may come around to the idea if you reinforce how much you would like her to wear one, have sex on one, or indeed if you want to wear one during intercourse. With that said, if she is really against it, it's probably not a good idea to keep asking her to share in this fantasy, or indeed persist in trying to change her mind. This may be something that is unique to you, rather than something you share as a couple. So you might have to show your love for raincoats in your own time. Good luck, Lucy.
I love that.
Some very sensible advice in there.
I know, but I love that he gets raincoat time, you know, if it doesn't work out with his wife.
Yeah, well, everyone needs a little bit of time in their raincoat.
What is a raincoat? I mean, this is a British website. What's a raincoat over there? I'm thinking the yellow PVC things we used to wear at primary school.
We have very many synonyms for them in the UK. We can have the anorak, the cagoule, the Macintosh, the raincoat. So, you know, really they're all interchangeable. Don't worry too much about that, Bernie. Let's get down to the science.
Okay. So Lucy gave a great answer, very sensible. I like that. It was very strong on the, you know, marital boundaries and stuff. But she didn't really take advantage of the wealth of science that is bound to be out there on Peter's situation.
Bound to be out there. So you're going to take this one, Bernie?
I'm very keen to take this one, Al. And I think, like, it's pretty safe to say Peter's got a raincoat fetish and his wife doesn't. And so we either need to cure Peter of the rain.
So well, if he wants to lose it.
Yeah. So that's one option. Either he gets rid of his fetish or he turns his wife onto raincoats. So the question is, can you cure a fetish is one question. And the other one is, can you turn someone else onto a fetish?
Sounds mighty interesting. Well, if you're taking this one, Bernie, be very careful with your internet search history at the end, okay?
Don't worry, I'll use your logon.
Oh, I thought you might say that.
I can't stand the rain. Against my window, bringing back sweet memories.
I spelled vagina with an R. Yeah.
Isn't that the Latin spelling?
It's Norman's login for BMJ.
Oh, no, you said to. Okay. It's not, by the way.
Pacemakers. You can have a fetish for pacemakers.
Benny, is that strictly research? Oh, dear.
I'm back, Al, but before you ask me anything, I probably should just explain what a fetish is.
Well, that'd be nice.
So a fetish is a sexual fixation on a non-genital thing. So a part of the body that's not the genitals or any other object. And it's, you know, something we can throw around pretty loosely, but if it becomes a real problem with your life, this fixation, then it's actually a clinical condition of fetishism. So that's that out of the way. Hit me with your questions.
So, Bernie, you were pretty confident that you were going to find some fetish research out to help Peter. What have you got?
I think I was actually quite cocky about it, Alice. And,
sounds about right.
There is plenty of research out there, but unfortunately it's not what you'd call really top-shelf stuff. So lots of very small studies, individual case studies.
Top-shelf fetish research. Yeah. That sounds like a funny thing.
It does go in the wrong direction, doesn't it? Partly the problem is that fetishes are actually really rare.
How rare?
Well, we don't really know because there hasn't been a lot of you know, study done on it, and it's not the kind of thing that gets asked in census questions. So, yeah, we just haven't really got an idea, but definitely like less than 1% of the population is a decent guess. And they're even rarer in women than in men. There was this study of cases of fetishists from a London teaching hospital, and over 20 years there were only 48 cases of people with fetishes, and only one of them was a woman.
Wow.
And she was a lesbian with a fetish for breasts.
Doesn't sound much like a fetish to me, that one.
I'm not sure it counts. I thought it was more like conditions for entry, but not that common.
But what about raincoat fetishes? Are they more common?
Yeah, well, here we get to one of the saving lights of fetish research, an actual study with decent numbers in it. This great study from Italy and Sweden in the 2000s, where they looked at all of these online discussion groups about sexual fetishes. And then they went through and ranked how common all of the different fetishes were. And raincoats didn't get a specific mention, but they sort of made almost 10% of fetishes for objects that you wear or clothes. So anything from, you know, latex to diapers. So coats were 9% of those.
But and how many participants were there, or how many people on these message boards?
Alice. Zillions, I expect. No, they gave a conservative estimate of about absolute minimum 5,000. And so it was well and truly.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Not too bad. That's outstanding. These things are usually lucky to get double digits in them. So by far the most common ones they found in this study were foot fetishes and basically anything to do with the feet as well.
With the feet? Right? Yeah. Why is that?
Well, there's been a few theories about why foot fetishes are so popular. The foot looked like a penis, according to Freud, no surprise there. That the foot fetish idea really got a kick along in the late 1990s when the neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran, he's the guy who did all the phantom limb. Yeah, phantom limb stuff. So as an aside in this lecture he gave, he said the way that the parts of the body map onto the brain, the foot and toes map right next to where the genitals map on the brain. And he was just saying, well, you know, maybe it could be that it's just having the feet next to where the genitals map on the brain. It could just be a bit of sloppy cross-wiring that could explain
Sloppy cross-wiring. That's the technical term, is it?
They weren't his exact words, but, you know, science journalist, I can paraphrase. So a bit of sloppy cross-wiring could explain why foot fetishes were so common. But not everyone's convinced. So I thought I'd just ask around a bit, and I rang every neurologist I know and their recommendations. And I got on to Associate Professor Michael Farrell. So he's the Associate Director of Monash Biomedical Imaging at Monash Uni. And here's what he reckons.
It's an appealing argument simply because the somatosensory cortex does have rough divisions, and such that, for instance, the feet and the legs are high up in the somatosensory cortex near the top of the brain. That's close to where the genitalia are also represented. But to imply that there are places in the brain that are exclusive for one particular part of the anatomy would be absolutely overstating things.
So even the most quoted bit of science in every pop science article about fetishes, you know, from what Michael said, it's not that solid.
It sounds like we don't really know that much about fetishes at all. But is there anything we can do to help Peter? It sounds like he doesn't want to get rid of his fetish.
Yeah, so I got that impression too.
Yeah, so can we perhaps, if she's willing, help his wife to be turned on to his fetish?
I thought that was a more interesting question. All right, well, it would have been easy to turn his wife onto fetishes if she were a bloke.
Oh, that seems like a bit of a problem. Why's that?
Well, there were all these studies in the 60s and 70s looking at whether you could get men through a kind of Pavlovian response, whether you could get men attracted to non-sexual things. So basically they would show you some erotica, so, you know, porn clip or some porn photos, and at the same time they'd be showing you images of neutral things like boots or even coloured shapes that had no resemblance to any, you know, bit of genitals or boobs or anything. And they found that, like, not all the men, but at least some of the men, after, you know, this bit of training, when they were shown the geometric shape or the unsexy boot, they got an erection anyway.
So they could turn men on to practically anything.
I'm sure you can train a penis to respond to just about anything, according to this stuff. But there was a little bit of a problem. The studies weren't spectacularly well designed. There weren't some...
Now you tell me, Bernie.
there weren't great controls, and some of the participants were a little bit too keen to be involved. Also small studies once again. But, you know, they did some better ones later. So men could be turned on.
And what about women?
Well, amazingly, they actually looked at women eventually 30 years later, and in 1997, Letourneau and O'Donoghue tried the same kind of thing with women. So they showed them erotica, and, you know, and they had this amber light going at the same time, so a very neutral, unsexy effect, and they got zero response from the women, not even a raised eyebrow.
And was this study in any way similar? You know, was it the same set of conditions as the first study? Can we really compare these two?
It's such a stickler for science, which is a great thing. But they didn't. No. Okay, so they weren't so identical. They weren't identical setups. But, and this is the only study I could find where they tried it with women and zero success, like just nothing. When they showed them the amber light alone, absolutely no blink of an eye.
So based on an amber light and one study, there's no hope for Peter's wife. That's you're saying.
Sorry about that. No, okay. It's not looking good for turning Peter's wife onto the raincoat fetish. So, yeah, maybe we have to actually look at getting Peter to give up his fetish.
And how can we do that? Are there any forms of treatment? Treatment being, you know, a funny word for something that somebody might not want to get rid of.
Exactly, yeah. So there's no one-off treatment for fetishes, but, you know, you generally would start with some therapy, and that's your cognitive behavioural therapy, your CBT, the usual kind of aversion therapy that they've used to, you know, so successfully rid people of gayness in the past.
So this is pretty controversial when it comes to sexual preference or sexual arousal.
Yeah, so aversion therapy, show you the stuff that you're attracted to. So they'd be showing Peter raincoats and, you know, also showing really unattractive or unpleasant gory photos, or even just pumping a bad smell into the room that he was in to try and get him off the raincoat association with pleasantness. So there's been a couple of reports, but again, one-off studies, you know, case reports. Mm-hmm. Medical literature is full of N=1 studies. It's really quite annoying. And, you know, in some people, therapy just doesn't work. So then drugs are an alternative.
Oh, so you give people medicines.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not talking fun drugs. We're talking drugs as a very blunt instrument to basically cut your sex drive right back. So
it's no good. It's not really, so you're stopping someone's sex drive, you're not really switching off their fetish.
It's true. So the usual antidepressants, SSRIs, or hormones to really lower the sex drive. So there's one thing that is a bit more meta than those N=1 studies is that when people have done both, so a bit of therapy, a bit of drugs, they tend to have a better, longer lasting effect. But the problem with all of this is, especially with the therapy stuff, you just don't know how well it lasts once the therapy stops, you know, if people are just going to keep on going.
Bernie, it doesn't really sound like science has been able to help Peter very much.
Don't worry, Alice. In the words of JFK, if he was doing our podcast, ask not what science can do for Peter, but what Peter can do for science. Time to write that letter. Dear Peter, great news. You can tell your wife that your fetish isn't weird. Raincoat fetishes fall in the coats and costumes category, which fully 9% of people with fetishes belong to.
That might not be enough to sway her, but short of you going for some aversion therapy or sex drive crushing antidepressants or hormones to get rid of your fetish, there's not a lot of options.
The trouble is that fetishes are generally so non-threatening to society, there hasn't been much good research on causes or treatment. But that's where you come in.
Instead of waiting for climate change to make raincoats even more popular in England, why not give science a hand by taking part in some fetish studies? Just make sure that you're not N=1.
Meanwhile, maybe buy some stylish his and hers raincoats, plan a camping trip anywhere in England, and hope that every cloud has a silver lining. Yours in science, Bernie
and Alice.
If you like the podcast, we'd love you to subscribe on iTunes, the ABC Radio app, or wherever you listen.
And why not follow us on Twitter? We're at Dear Science Pod. Next on Dear Science.